You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah. Coming up tonight after 7, it's The Political Junkie with Ken Rudin. On this week's edition, Ken and his guests look back on a rough week for the Donald Trump campaign. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, the debate over voter ID laws has raged on from Wisconsin to North Carolina and elsewhere this summer. Arguments have centered around whether the laws are a common-sense solution to voter fraud or whether they attack a rare crime at the expense of some eligible voters. Nearly five courts in five states have ruled against voter ID laws. That includes Wisconsin. Last week, a federal judge struck down parts of Wisconsin's voter ID law and other election rules related to early voting, time of residency in a voting ward, and absentee ballots. Joining me now to talk more about rulings on election laws around the country is Kimmy King. She's an associate professor of political science at the University of North Texas. Kimmy, welcome back.
Good to be back. Support your public radio.
Thank you. Well, so many court rulings coming down, striking down all or part of various voter ID and other election changes lately. We can get into some of the details in a bit, Kimmy, but why this whole mess of rulings over this two-week span?
Well, it's really a function of something that happened back in 2013 when the Supreme Court ruled 5-4, while Scalia was still alive and in the majority, that the formula used to determine when states fell under the federal jurisdiction of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, that they basically held that that formula was invalid, and it freed up the states to enact voting rights legislation, and enact they did. And that's why you are now seeing 2 to 3 years later, because it takes a while in federal court to get cases filed, it's really the onslaught of litigation finally reaching the courts.
And I've read that some people are looking at now a 4-4 U.S. Supreme Court and judges thinking, well, if I make this ruling, it's not going to be overruled, so now's the time to do it?
Yeah, well, I actually think that it's a function. If you go back to 2008, the Supreme Court had actually ruled on a voter identification law in Indiana. And so much of this comes down to what the government can show as its interests for why it's enacting any voting rights legislation, whether it has to do with voter ID or the hours of the polls or absentee ballots. And so, in essence, what this does is that they said that you have to look more closely at what the states are doing. States have to justify the interest that they are asserting. And now that Shelby County, the decision in 2013, came down, it's almost as if the courts are saying, well, if the Justice Department no longer has the ability to keep a close eye on what the states are doing, we, the federal courts, are going to be a guardian of that. And so it's arguable that that's what that is.
And looking at a lot of these rulings, a consistent theme is that, or the consistent question, I guess, is does this particular law unduly burden a particular group of people, whether that's a minority group, in some cases, is that Democratic voters? Does it affect one group's voting ability to vote more than another? Is that generally the main question?
In part of it, it is. But in the Marion County case in Indiana in 2008, what they said was that when they're looking at the state's law and any kind of burden on an individual voter or a political party or any group of people has to be justified by relevant and legitimate state interests sufficiently weighty to justify the limitation. So typically the state's interest is vote fraud. And so you have to prove that vote fraud is happening. But even if you prove vote fraud is happening, you have to show that the measure that you're putting in place is justified for that limitation. And so that's really what it boils down to, that the courts are looking extremely closely at the state's interest, and they're kind of holding them accountable if they're unable to show sufficient evidence. And that's what your judge said.
And one of the big questions there is the state's right to set their own laws versus federal rights. And as I understand it, that's been the argument from states a lot. We get to decide what the state interest is, not the federal government. And these federal court judges apparently not buying that lately.
In part. part, but understand our Constitution's founders, in their infinite wisdom, wanted a scheme where the states had a role in implementing elections. Over time, and with the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, indeed any of the amendments being passed on, extending the franchise or the right to vote to people, what has happened then, in essence, is that that right is a minimum floor that the federal government has the ability to protect. So while the states have the ability to regulate elections, the federal government has the ability to set the federal floor on the minimum rights that are guaranteed. And what you are seeing here is the clash between what the floor says and what the states can be allowed to do.
We're talking to Kimmy King from the University of North Texas, looking at a string of rulings. Multiple states, federal judges are overturning all or parts of recently changed election laws, often involving voter ID, but not exclusively. Kimmy, let's focus in on voter ID in particular. That's the one where the idea of fraud comes up and fraud prevention. What's been the trend in those laws being passed, and now what judges are saying over the last 2 weeks?
Well, it's really almost dizzying to keep track of it, because states had begun enacting voter legislation, you know, voter identification laws going back to 2000. I mean, this is not something that is new, really. But what is new is the kind of detailed regulations that can be applied. And so, for example, one of the things that got the Texas voter ID into trouble with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is hardly a liberal court, it's actually considered to be one of the most conservative in the country, what they were unhappy about was, well, why is it you're allowing military IDs and concealed handgun carry permits, but you don't allow IDs from state employees or university photo identification? And so it's that if you say you want to protect voting rights, well, then you have to make sure that you are actually doing that with the mechanism that you've put in place.
Voter ID isn't the only thing that's been involved in some of these rulings, including here in Wisconsin, changes to early voting laws, restrictions on early voting compared to what had come before. That I think there's an Ohio ruling on that recently as well. Can you talk about how that has been seen as affecting different groups differently and running afoul of the courts?
Well, it can vary substantially, and this is another thing that the states have to show as evidentiary proofs when they go into court. And so your judge struck down, for example, a ban on emailing absentee ballots to voters, right? And if you look, for example, at North Dakota, you know, said that voters don't have to register, but they put in place identity cards. Well, for the Native American population, about 25% of them who are otherwise eligible to vote don't have that ID. But if you look at the non-American Indian population, only 12%. So the North Dakota judge looked at that and said, that has an impact on a specific group. So another challenge you will see with voter identification that you're starting to see will be women who have changed their name. If they got married or if they got divorced, men who want to hyphenate their name with their wife. And so understand that it really depends on the litigation. And what happens in each of the cases is that all the groups come forward and they show how this law in this state is problematic. And so once again, it's almost like the same-sex marriage, you know, issue in marriage equality. We have this patchwork of laws because the states can regulate elections, but they can't interfere with voting rights. And that's what judges are struggling with.
We're talking to Kimmy King, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of North Texas, looking at the rise in rulings lately on election laws. And this is just a few months ahead of the general election. We'll get to that in just a minute. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What did you think about the recent rulings, actually two different rulings from federal judges related to election laws in Wisconsin, one limited to photo ID, one covering some other ground? Do you think there should be changes to election laws this close to the general election in November? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Kimmy King, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of North Texas, looking at multiple states around the country, including Wisconsin, where rulings came down on election laws over the last couple of weeks. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are the changes in voter ID laws, other election laws, early voting, things like that, are they impacting you? Do you help people register to vote, trying to get more people in your community to the polls? Do you think that voter ID laws should be struck down now, close to the November election? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Kimmy, let's look at that question. These courts are ruling on voter ID laws, other election laws, with elections, as we keep hearing, 90-some days away now in the presidential election.
So part of the reason why everyone is interested, and it will be very curious to see how this plays out, but if you were tracking public opinion polls in the first 2 days following the conclusion of the Democratic Convention, you saw the poll numbers between Trump and Clinton roughly proximate to where they were at this point in the 2000 election. So what I'd like your listeners to think about as we move forward is that if those poll numbers continue to track the way they did, then we could be set for another showdown where you would have a divide regarding the vote being so close that it could, and if you have a third party get in because they're unhappy about Donald Trump, it may divide the vote because you have to have that majority vote in the Electoral College, and that's when it gets messy. That's when we face another, you know, constitutional potential crisis where it would be thrown to the House of Representatives and to the Senate. I think at this point it's really unlikely the Supreme Court will weigh in again because in the Bush and Gore debacle of 2000, they really came away wounded and their legitimacy suffered greatly.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. Troy is on the line in Milwaukee. Troy, hi.
Hello. I would just make a challenge out there. I've been talking to a lot of people about this, and one of the things I notice is really obvious is when you have a conversation with somebody about this and you get over the statistic that this is a minority, the voter fraud is not really even a major issue, then you get into these conversations and you'll find out that when you unpeel that onion, these are about just some sort of prejudice or discrimination where a person feels that a certain person or a minority or a social class shouldn't be allowed to vote. When you get into those conversations.
Troy, thanks for the call. And Kimmy, one of the rulings, I think it might have been the North Carolina one, the judge said this really specifically, the judge thought these laws were targeting minority groups. That was the outcome. That's why the judge ruled that way. What do you make of that?
Actually, the North Carolina, the Fourth Circuit, was a little brutal on the North Carolina law, which included a bunch of voting restrictions, but it also shortened the early voting period. It banned same-day registration. And so the Fourth Circuit found that when they looked back at the data and demographics, they said that it actually targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision, and that it imposes cures for problems that did not exist. Those are damning words about a state law. There, they're clearly finding intent, that you intended to discriminate. The Fifth Circuit, again, more conservative, didn't come out and sort of go that far, but it looked at this discriminatory impact and said, you better come up with a fix before the elections in November. So they gave them their marching orders. So while they may have said it was just an impact, they also said it's an impact you got to do something about.
Troy, thanks for that call. And yeah, I wonder how much does that matter to a court if there was an intent, a provable intent for on the legislature's part to disenfranchise a minority group, which seems like it'd be really hard to prove. Nobody's going to say in a press release that's what we're trying to do versus the outcome, which it doesn't matter what the intent was.
So every court, and this is part of the reason why this is going to ultimately land for further ruling in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, whether it's a 4-4 court or it's after the election and we have somebody else in, it really boils down to in the post-Shelby case, in the post-2013 era, when the federal government does not have the same role as it did before, at least in terms of the office of the executive, the presidency. What role will the courts have? And what this signals to us is, so far, the courts are saying, yeah, we will take that up. If the federal government isn't going to do what it should, if the Supreme Court doesn't have the full complement of people that it needs, we are going to continue making determinations about this.
If I can step back to kind of a civics 101 level, Kimmy, is this often how things work? Something changes at the federal level, and in this case, that change in the Voting Rights Act. Then things change at the state level. States try lots of new things, see what flies, what doesn't, and then it percolates back up to that Supreme Court ruling in the future.
This is such a great question. You really should have been a poli-sci major, because we look at this issue of what we call policy diffusion. And you look at the extent to which policies move across these United States and the extent to which there is pushback when policies are implemented. And I don't care if you're looking at transgender bathrooms, if you're looking at voting rights, whatever issue, gender discrimination, there in any kind of social movement, there's always a push to change and then a push back. Whether it's conservative or liberal change makes no difference. It's that the change occurs. And so what you're seeing now, you know, it's interesting because Kansas also had a law, and to try to avoid some of that federal-state stuff, they tried to draw distinctions between being able to vote in federal elections and the ID you had to have there, and then the kind of ID you had to have in state elections. But keep in mind, and then the attorney, you know, the courts dispatched with that. The state attorney general tried one last move, and this last go-round and this last set of rulings in the last 2 weeks, Kansas judge said, that's not going to fly either, state attorney general.
All right, Kimmy, we'll leave it there. Thanks. It's always good to talk to you.
You bet.
We've been talking to Kimmy King. She's an associate professor of political science at the University of North Texas. We've been looking at all of these court rulings in Wisconsin and a handful of other states overturning part or all of voter ID laws and other recently passed election laws around the country.